Well, I'm extremely grateful that you guys are here. This is the last talk of the last session of the last day, so you guys are troopers. Thank you. So I'm going to be speaking to you about part of my dissertation, which is looking at trajectories in BMI Z-score from birth to adolescence and their maternal and social risk factors. I want to acknowledge another graduate student that helped me on this, Stacey Carling, and then my advisor, Christine Olson, who you guys heard from before. So I have no relationships to disclose. So I want to talk a little bit about how we measure socioeconomic status and the fact that we often do it just at one time period and we often use income. And so we usually, it's low, medium, high, sometimes it's just low and high. And it got me thinking about if that was appropriate, if just measuring it at one time point really captured what was going on in a kid's life or a family's life. And I think this is particularly salient when we look at the fact that 51% of adult Americans will spend at least 1 year in low income, 51% will also spend at least 1 year in affluence, 22% will live at least 1 year in both, so they experience both affluence and low income in their lifetime, and only 20% experience neither, so there's only about 20% that never experience affluence and never experience low income. So I think this is a really good picture of how dynamic income is in the United States, and got me thinking about how we might be able to better capture these dynamics. So one way to do that is to look at trajectories. So, for example, we have this, we have income along the y-axis and age along the x-axis, and we have this hypothetical person who starts off high income, moves into low income, and then moves back out. You have someone who spends most of their life sort of relatively stable, and then you have another person who starts off low income and then moves out of it by the end of their life. And if we were just to look at those children or people at that end point, we would say that they're all the same. But really, they've had very different paths to get to that point, and though that path might have a really important implication on their health and their health status. So specifically for my dissertation, I was interested in how that was connected with BMI Z-score trajectories. And I use the life course perspective, which really suggests that trajectories are linked and reinforce each other, so that the idea that there was a change in one trajectory could cause a change in another one. So someone who starts off low income but moves out of it might be in a better health status position than someone who's chronically low income for all of their childhood. So the aim of this study that I'll be sharing with you today was to identify family income trajectories, and that's from 0 to 15 years of age, and if they were associated with BMI Z-score trajectories, which I looked at from 2 to 15 years. And I also wanted to do that in the context of early life risk factors. And those risk factors were maternal overweight, maternal gestational weight gain, maternal smoking during pregnancy, breastfeeding duration, and early life growth trajectory. And that early life growth trajectory is that 0 to 2 time period, so looking at how growth patterns during that time were associated with growth later in life. So the population that I used was from 8 rural upstate New York counties, served by 1 medical system. The sample was of children that were born from 1995 to 1997, and we have growth and health data for them from 0 to 15 years. 43% were born to low-income families, 96% were white, and 47% were overweight or obese by 15 years. And 40% is about the New York State average, so these children were at slightly greater risk for overweight and obesity. The original sample was 595 children, and the analysis sample was 502, and that was mainly due to children moving out of the area. So there's 2 sources of data collection. The first was from the Bassett Mothers Health Project 1, and that was started by Dr. Christine Olson, and it was interested in looking at gestational weight gain and postpartum weight retention, and it enrolled the mothers. So we have all this great data about the moms during pregnancy and postpartum, and then what Stacey Carly and I did is we went back and did retrospective medical chart audits of the kids of those mothers. So for the first form of measurement that I want to talk about is the outcome, BMI Z-score trajectory. So we use the heights and weights recorded at a doctor's visit to create the BMI Z-score based on the growth standards for the WHO. And so these are age and gender associated. And what you get is this. So we have all these kids' BMI measurements over time. So you get all these lines, and there's lots of different ways that you could operationalize this. You could look at change. You could look at just certain time periods to see if they're overweight or not. But what I was interested in was getting away from this idea that there's one population mean in there, which is that blue line, and starting to think about if there's underlying trends there. So maybe there's different subpopulations that explain how these kids are growing. And one way to do this is to use latent class modeling. And I used a program called Proc Trajectory in SAS, which is created for longitudinal data. And it does exactly this. It tries to find if there's a certain number of groups that explain this data. And the next measurement that I'm going to talk about is the family income trajectory. And to do this, we use the insurance code at the time of the doctor's visit. So if they were classified as either low income or not, and that was if they were below 185% of the poverty line. So again, below this is just sort of like an example of a child going to the doctor's visit, and they'd be classified as not low income, and then maybe at some point their family moved into low income and was on Medicaid, and then stayed that way. So then we had all those trajectories again for the children, and we used this latent class modeling to see what trends emerged or trajectories emerged. The other risk factors were maternal overweight, maternal gestational weight gain, which is classified as excessive, adequate, or inadequate, maternal smoking during pregnancy, breastfeeding duration, which was classified by less than 1 month, 1 to 4 months, 4 to 8 months, and greater than 8 months. And that was also using latent class modeling. So that just, it defined the groups based on the trends in the data. It wasn't any predetermined groups that we created. And then early life growth trajectory, we used weight for height Z-scores, and three groups emerged here. It was a high rising group, a low rising group, and a stable group. And the controls that we also included in our multivariate models were the age of mother at time of delivery, if it was her first child, and for the child was birth weight quartile, sex, medication use, and start of puberty. So the type of multivariate analysis we did was multinomial logistic regression. So in a logistic regression, you would compare one group, like an overweight group, to a not overweight group, and see if any of the variables made it more likely that you would be in this overweight group. But with multinomials, since we had multiple trajectories, you're basically creating models for each one of those BMI or Z-score trajectories based on comparing it to a reference group. So, now the results. I want to share with you first the BMI Z-score trajectory. And what we found, so along the y-axis is the BMI Z-score, and along the x-axis is the age from 2 to 15. And first we found an obese trajectory, which is about 12% of the population. They started off at a BMI Z-score above 1, so they started off overweight at the age of 2, and then just rose until about 9 and then became stable. Then we have a become overweight group, which is about 15% of the population. We have an overweight stable group, which was 20%, and then 53% were a not overweight trajectory. The next is the income trajectory. So along the y-axis, you have the probability of being not low income. And so for the first group, this is sort of like a persistently low income group. The probability of being low income is fairly high throughout their childhood. You have a downwardly mobile group. So this is a group that starts off not low income and moves into low income. A upwardly mobile group, which starts off low income and then moves out of it. And then a not low income group, which was the majority of the sample, which is about 56%. So next I want to show you how these related to each other in the multinomial logistic regression. So this model includes the risk factors and the control variables that I talked to you about before. And we have the three outcomes that we're interested in, obese, become overweight, and overweight stable along the top there. And these are all compared to the not overweight group. So for income trajectory, we see that the persistently low-income children, these are the kids that are chronically low-income, they're more likely to be in the overweight stable group. Then we see in the downwardly mobile children, the kids that start off not low-income but move into it, that they're more likely to be in the obese trajectory. And interestingly, the upwardly mobile children are not more likely to be in any of these sort of poorer growth trajectories compared to the not low-income children. So these kids that moved out of low-income are not at greater risk for being obese or becoming overweight. When we look at the other early life risk factors, three of them remained in the model. Smoking and breastfeeding dropped out. But maternal overweight was strongly associated with obese, become overweight, and overweight stable. Excessive gestational weight gain was associated with the become overweight group. And then the high rise in growth, early life growth trajectory, that growth from 0 to 2, made it more likely that the child would be obese or in the overweight stable group, which makes sense because those were the two groups that already started off at sort of a high level. So finally, I wanted to check to see if this measure of SDS, this income trajectory, was actually a better measure than being low income at birth or being low income in adolescence or maternal education. So what we see is Model A is all the risk factors and the controls without any measure of SDS. And we have the R-squared R-squared over there, and that's a measure of how much variability the model explains. So our model without any measures of SES explains 35.2% of the variation in our data. When I add income trajectories in, not only are they significantly associated with BMI Z-score trajectory, but they increase the variation that the model explains by 2.5%. Whereas low income at birth, low income in adolescence, ever low income, or maternal education are not associated with BMI Z-score and don't improve the variation that the model explains by any significant amount. So, in conclusion, we see that from the BMI Z-score trajectories that overweight and obesity is developing quite early in this population, that some of the kids, even by the age of 2, are set on a trajectory that's unhealthy for them. We see that the family income trajectory, that income status is variable, that 32% of our sample is moving in and out of low income. And that some of the income trajectories are associated with some of the BMI Z-score trajectories. And the income trajectory explains more of the variation than other measures of SES. So in a longitudinal setting, if you have multiple measures of income, it might be interesting to look at those changes instead of just using one measure, one time period. So there are several strengths and weaknesses to this study. The first being that it's a rural population, it's a rural sample, and part of this is a strength because it's an understudied population that's at greater risk for overweight and obesity, but the generalizability is not great in this study. So if this can be extended to other rural populations in other states is questionable. So doing this in a more diverse and more nationally representative sample would be helpful. The next aspect of the study that I want to talk about is the longitudinal nature. So I think this is a real strength of this study. A lot of the information that we know about relationships between social determinants of health and childhood overweight and obesity are cross-sectional studies. And it's really great to get a chance to look at these trajectories and how they're changing. A weakness is that we do have some attrition in the sample. Luckily, this is a fairly stable population. There's not a lot of moving, and one of the benefits of this medical system that they were in was that there's free health clinics at the schools that these children attend, and that it's tied into their medical records. So low-income children were maintained in this sample. The medical chart audits provided us with measured heights and weights, which is great. But a weakness is that they're opportunistic measures, so we only have measures when they went to the doctor. And finally, the use of latent class modeling allows us to capture some of these dynamics in a really, I think, quite visually stimulating way. But whenever you're classifying complex data, you always run the risk of oversimplification, and we might be missing an important group in there. So I want to end by going back to this graph where we see that the persistently low-income children are more likely to be in this overweight stable group, whereas the downwardly mobile children are more likely to be in this obese group. And I think that downwardly mobile children are really one of the more interesting findings in this study. And these are kids that are moving into assistance programs. Their families are becoming low income. And thinking about the ways that we can help those families in that transition and to prevent the risk of obesity, I think it has important implications for intervention and policy. So I'd be happy to take any questions at this point.
The data work in that study is definitely worthy of a PhD. Question.
And you only have half the story.
So you mentioned at the end, you know, some possible policy implications.
Yeah.
That's where I always tend towards things. Mm-hmm. What are some of your thoughts about that?
Well, I think, there's been not a lot of work that's looked at these transitions in income and the effects on children's health. But I think part of what we need to learn here is about the stress of those events and what's happening with those kids. Is this a biological process, that their lives are just so much more stressful that even if they're not changing their diet, they're increasing their weight status because of the stress that their bodies are under? Or if this is something to do with their parents become low income and now they're eating differently, or their parents got divorced and they're eating more at fast food restaurants. So finding out what some of those mechanisms are, I think, could be really important in actually directing the policy.
They could also, of course, all be interrelated, because the families I see that go into low income, more stressful lives, lead to different eating practices,
right,
and more stress.
Yep. And I think, in a conference like this, I think most people are really aware of the social determinants of health. But I think in the larger audience and in the political audience, we still tend to blame individuals and families for their weight status, and finding ways to illustrate that there are really complex social determinants of these health problems, I think, is important as well. So. I think if I'm getting your question, if the income status changed for the mom during pregnancy, if there was any. The income is based on the mom's income status. Right. So because the data that I got on income status was from the child's medical record, I have the mom's starting income status based on insurance code, but and actually her income, but I wasn't able to look at any changes. But
we took that variable actually from the medical record. So it's how the hospital got paid for the birth.
Yeah. One time point, yeah. Anything else? Well, thank you guys. You're troopers.